That set consisted of Right Off by Miles Davis from his album A Tribute to Jack Johnson. Recorded in November 1970, the all-star lineup consisting of Michael Henderson on Fender bass, Billy Cobham on drums, Steve Grossman on soprano saxophone, John McLaughlin on guitar, Herbie Hancock on keyboards, and Miles Davis, of course, on trumpet. Just a remarkable album, edited together into a suite by the producer, Teo Macero. And that wraps up the program. Stay tuned for 7 Second Delay. My name's Irwin. I'll be back next Wednesday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern. This is WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope in New York City, and Rockland County at 91.9 FM, and online at WFMU.org.
Greetings, 7 Second Delay fans. Tonight is the first episode of an experimental series in which 7 Second Delay fans interview Andy Breckman and myself. Andy is in Toronto, on the west side of Toronto, on the lot where they are shooting the Monk movie. I leave it to WFMU listeners in Toronto to track down and taunt Andy through the fence. Tonight we air two interviews, two of the first ones we did. The first one that we're going to air is by Daniel Scheide, who informed Andy and I that 7 Second Delay is apparently very, very popular with the vampiric community, as well as Andy's hit TV show Monk, also being very, very popular with the vampires out there. You'll be able to detect that Andy suffered from some of the same problems during these interviews as he does during the show. Primarily that he does not know how to begin a show or begin an interview. So here is the awkward beginning of Daniel Scheide's interview with me and Andy.
I think we've definitely, I don't know if I agree, Uncle Ken. I think okay. We've definitely started.
Oh, we have started.
Well, I did my early onset dementia shtick.
Okay.
I was late to lose.
Then, Daniel, I stand corrected. We're already on the air. This has already begun. I have no problem being an expert on vampires, because I am an expert on vampires. Andy has a bit of trouble acting and pretending. And
I'm an expert. I'm an expert on Ken Friedman, who is an expert on vampires. So I'm, by proxy, just one vampire expert removed. I saw, now tell me, tell me about this project, or as much as you're comfortable telling us about the project.
Oh, it's just a film. You know, I recently turned 15 and I was like, oh, thinking about how I've been in a creative rut and I just wanted to do something, you know, fun with some friends. And it's gotten kind of out of hand and I have absolutely no idea what I'm doing, but I just wrote a script and I blackmailed some people into performing it. And
is it a scripted vampire story?
It is mostly scripted, but we're doing some sort of a lot of improv stuff, and that has been going surprisingly well, actually. So,
oh, fantastic. And then have you completed the film, or are you in, it's a work in progress?
It is a work in progress. I've done the local filming and I've done part of the stuff by Zoom, and I'm going to be going to some various other places to film, which I just did to make matters more complicated, I guess. So yeah, it's kind of, I'm hoping to have it done by, you know, late summer, early fall.
And what is your working title?
Well, I don't like to tell people the title because I think that scares people away from the film, but actually that does lead into my first question for you.
Okay.
So my working title is Seduced by a Vampire.
I love that title.
And so my first question
is, your tagline, this movie sucks?
No, that it was actually going to be Seduced by a Vampire, the Daniel Scheide story. But I thought that would frighten people. That would be me. That would be me. Yes.
Daniel Scheide?
Scheide, yes.
That's his name.
That's my name.
That's,
oh, I'm sorry. I completely, I blanked on your name.
That's okay.
That's okay. I apologize for that.
But that does,
that is a great, it is a great title, Daniel.
Thank you. Thank you. But that does lead into my first question for you folks. Have either of you been seduced by a vampire?
Well, I sure love, there are certainly a lot of vampires I've loved. I guess mostly cinematic vampires, Klaus Kinski's Nosferatu in the Herzog movie.
Excellent one, excellent one.
I was going to say that too, but I couldn't pronounce the name of the movie.
I also loved Gary Oldman. Can't remember the name of that movie, but he was, I'd say he was the best one ever.
But in your personal life, I think, is my question.
I've been seduced by vampire squids while swimming.
Fair enough.
Where they've grabbed a hold of my lower reaches.
Ken.
Yeah.
That was me.
Was it?
Yeah, I was in the lake swimming next to you, remember? And that was no squid.
You pranked me?
That was my impression. I don't do a lot of impressions, but that was my impression of a vampire squid.
Daniel, I apologize. I guess I haven't been.
No, it's okay.
Seduced.
Nothing to be ashamed of. Nothing to be ashamed of.
By a vampire squid.
Yes. And I take it that's a no from you, Andy. That's a
do vampires. Tell me about a vampire's MO. I don't recall. I'm sure my memory's not what it was. I don't recall being seduced by a vampire. Does a vampire seduce its victims? Or does a vampire just lunge and attack its victims?
No.
Vampires are very big on consent. You know, they can't enter someone's home unless they've been invited.
No, well, wait a minute. Don't they just fly in as bats over the
No, chair? They have to be invited inside, Andy.
Is that just courtesy, or is that one of the rules of vampires?
That's part of the vampiric code.
Listen, I mean, you're a human. You have the ability to just knock somebody over the head with, like, you know, a blunt object and drag them into your basement.
No, Daniel,
you wouldn't do that.
You need a wooden stake. You can't just knock a vampire out. He'll turn into a bat. He'll fly around the room.
No. What I'm saying is that you are a human.
Yes.
And you, as a human, have the ability to knock somebody over the head with a blunt object, but you wouldn't do that because that would be wrong.
Oh, I see. You mean it's against their code of...
So, you know, a vampire just doesn't go around biting people randomly. They're not savages.
Not intrinsically evil.
Well, there are dark vampires. and light vampires, but you know, the vampire only needs to get your invitation to enter your home. If you're out in a public park, you know, or a water park, or you know, some public place, the vampire can just jump out from behind a doorway and attack you. And some of them do that.
You mean vampires? They have no compulsion against attacking someone in public.
It depends. If they're hungry, but they might do that.
But if they're home, how about the vampires distinguish between someone who's renting and someone that owns their home?
That's an excellent question.
Oh, it's a great question.
Well, it doesn't matter whether you're an owner or a renter if you're just walking down the boulevard at the water park.
I agree. You're saying that a vampire can attack you at the water park.
Yeah.
But at the home, he defers. He will not enter without being invited.
I know. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
No, it doesn't make any sense at all.
Yeah.
But suppose you're house sitting. You're in the house, but it's not your house.
Oh, that's a great question.
That's a good question to you, Ken, is it? Is that a good question?
That is a good question.
Well, we'll have to see the movie to get this and other questions answered.
That will be covered by the movie.
I'm trying to think if there was ever a house sitter in True Blood. And I can't think of anybody house sitting.
Hey, Daniel and Ken, did you ever read the Woody Allen short story called Count Dracula?
No.
It sounds vaguely familiar, but it's not.
I believe, unless I'm wrong, and I'm not, it's in his first collection of stories. And I'll tell you very quickly, I'll tell you the plot. Count Dracula, the vampire, waits for it to get dark and then emerges from his crypt and then goes walking around the village looking for victims so he can suck their blood. And he knocks on the door of a couple in the village. And while he's waiting for them to answer, he realizes it's not nighttime. He's made a horrible mistake. It's a solar eclipse.
Oh, so man.
It's only dark. It's only dark for another few minutes.
Ooh.
So now he's panicking, and he must get inside. And he races inside into this nice couple's cottage, and he just flees right past them into the closet and closes the door because it's a solar eclipse.
So that plot idea is off the table then.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's...
I wouldn't say that, Daniel. I would say that you should feel free to use the concept of a vampire dealing with a solar eclipse in this movie.
It would be very... It's very dangerous, actually, if you think about it, and confusing for vampires. But, Daniel, tell me in one line what we call in the business the elevator pitch. Tell me the story, the log line.
Sounds like you're interviewing Daniel, Andy.
Well, it's called a conversation, Ken. Don't be scared. It's just a conversation.
How do you spell that?
We'll talk later.
Okay.
Daniel, what is the one line of the plot of the movie?
Well, there are, unfortunately, I sort of convoluted it, and there are sort of several plot lines running through it. It is the inability of the star of the film to be seduced by a vampire who wants to be seduced by a vampire. And it also deals with the prejudice against vampires in the state of Florida today.
Oh, I see. So you have a little political agenda there as well.
Yes, yes.
Fantastic. This is a great, great movie. This is a great idea for me.
Yeah, is the protagonist excessively ugly?
Yes. Well, that'll be me.
Okay. Well, so that might explain, because, you know, vampires often have really excellent taste.
They do.
I found a little flaw in your plot point. Daniel, you are a very attractive person.
Thank you, sir.
So your storyline won't quite ring true.
Well, that's why it's a tragedy.
Okay.
I'm sure they can apply makeup and make you hideously ugly.
Yes.
Yeah, and then, you know, most vampires are fashion mavens, and you know they're really put together. I mean, you know, they know what they're doing, fashion wise, and you know, just socially. So it would make sense. That's an interesting take on vampires.
Seduced by a vampire.
Yes. But I wanted to ask Andy, since you are a movie and television creator yourself, you've created a TV show called Monk, I believe.
Yeah.
Which features a detective who suffers from obsessive compulsive disorder. And of course, a large percentage of vampires are plagued with arrhythmomania, which is an obsessive compulsive disorder in which the subject is fixated with counting objects. So I wanted to know, was that an intentional shout out to the vampire community? And does that have to do with the fact that the star of your show, Tony Shalhoub, is secretly a vampire?
Well, you've asked a number of insane questions, each one more insane than the last.
Yet I do recall shows where Tony Shalhoub was counting things as he walked down the street.
That's true. And I have to be honest with you, I didn't know that the character Monk has that in common with vampires. I do know this about Tony Shalhoub. I don't know whether he's a vampire or not, but I know the only way to kill him is with a wooden stake. I've tried metal stakes, for example, and he just shrugs it off.
Where did you put the metal stake?
Right to his heart while he was in his trailer.
And it still didn't work?
No.
Did it slow him down at all?
And you know what? It made him very irritable. And for the rest of the day, he was not able to focus on his scenes the way he normally would.
Yeah.
Now that you mention it.
So it wasn't a total failure.
No, it made him irritable.
Yeah.
Which is not what I wanted at all.
Well, yeah, next time use a wooden stake.
Of course, it's easier said than done. Right. I don't know where do you find a wooden stake? How else can one kill a vampire, according to the lore?
With a silver bullet.
I think that's werewolves.
That's werewolves, Ken.
You can burn them alive with
sunlight. I wish you could hear yourself sometimes.
But, I think it's interesting that both of you automatically view the vampire as an enemy. I mean, they're just ordinary people trying to, have their own lives. They live, they love, they learn.
They live forever, don't they?
Well,
yeah, unless they get killed.
Someone like you comes and stabs them with a wooden stake. But
I think in the case that Andy's describing, the vampire that he so feared was also his meal ticket. So I think subconsciously, Andy probably didn't really want to kill Tony Shalhoub, which is why he used a metal stake and not a wooden stake.
I was just pretty angry that day. He changed three words in a dialogue in a scene.
So do you think
for example, I hate it when Ken changes the dialogue that I write for him every week. Sometimes he will deviate and go off by a word or two.
I rarely do that.
You're getting better.
Almost every word is exactly as written.
You're getting much better.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that you've noticed.
The character of Ken Friedman is and probably the character I'm proudest of.
Do you own that character?
I created him and own him, yeah. I made him sort of a paranoid dope head.
I think that's a reduction.
But would you say that this the character of Monk's obsessive compulsive disorder is why your show is so popular in the vampire community? Or do you think it may be tied also because vampires are very elderly and that is the usual demographic of the show?
I think the mothers of vampires enjoy my show.
Yeah, that's true. It really is. It's the Murder, She Wrote demographic.
Yeah, no, that's true. I used to always joke that we had 8 million sets of eyeballs watching our show last week, 24 million if you count the cats. That was my little joke. It's interesting to think about the mothers of vampires. Are they all vampires, Daniel?
Depends on how someone became a vampire. I think it just varies by case by case.
I mean, that would be a very, very interesting Christmas dinner, wouldn't it? To have your children home, your three children. One's a doctor, one's a lawyer, one's a vampire. And you have to pretend you love them all the same. But really, you love the doctor more than the others.
But it would be very convenient for a vampire to be a doctor. I mean, there's a lot of access.
To have a doctor's sister.
I mean, you know, as a vampire, you know, being a doctor, you have access to blood banks. You would have, you know.
Oh, that's true. Interesting.
You know, being immortal, it would be very, you know, it wouldn't be so much of a, you know, too taxing to spend those years in medical school.
Interesting. That's good advice for young vampires,
even old vampires, since they're
old. That's right. Old vampires have the time to go back to school.
I think that's a lot of work to get access to blood. They could just be an EMT or a volunteer for a rescue squad, and you know, or an orderly at a hospital, and get a lot of access to blood that way.
Actually, one of the vampires in my film is an EMT. Yeah, Elizabeth Bathory is an EMT.
Bathory, that's a famous vampire name.
Yes, yes. There are several vampires claiming to be the famous Elizabeth Bathory, and she is one of them. It's kind of a feud between them. So,
wow, I'm very impressed, Daniel.
Yes. I believe she is the real Elizabeth Bathory.
What makes you say that?
Just a feeling I have, just a hunch.
Yeah, well, that counts for a lot.
And did she become an EMT to have access to supplies of blood?
I didn't think to ask her that.
You know, an interesting.
I know.
Interesting footnote, when there's a crisis around the world, when there's an earthquake or there's a humanitarian crisis, I can't give blood because I'm on medication. So I send sperm. I've been sending bags of sperm to earthquake victims.
It's like Turkey?
Turkey, right. And never get a thank you. Never.
I don't think they need sperm after an earthquake.
They can't hurt.
They have lots of other concerns on their hand other than infertility.
I can't give blood, Ken. Maybe you didn't hear me.
No, I heard.
Because I'm on medication. Yeah, what else can I do?
Send money?
Oh, please. I'm trying to be serious. What else can I do?
Just send a lot of money.
It's not just sperm. They can also use the baggies that the sperm comes in.
I bet you they're not. If you're just putting them in baggies, they're probably they're probably not even making it all the way to Turkey or wherever.
Just one man. I'm 3 or 4 baggies a week.
Well, it's a nice thought. It's a nice thought, but.
I was thinking of asking the FMU volunteers to chip in.
No, please don't do that.
If I bring some baggies to the station.
No, please keep this thing completely at your house.
Okay.
In the room.
Okay.
The room in the basement. Thanks. Well, Daniel, do you have any final questions? I think we've been yabbering for around 20 minutes.
Yeah, I just wanted to move away from the topic of vampires for a minute and talk about the Lizard Man of South Carolina.
Uh-huh.
Have either of you been seduced by the Lizard Man of South Carolina?
I have not.
Is this your follow-up project, Daniel? Is this your next movie?
Well, my follow-up question to that is, would you ever consider being seduced by the Lizard Man of South Carolina?
I know
he just recently went through a difficult divorce. He's kind of lonely right now.
I don't have any experience with the Lizard Man of South Carolina, but I do recall the Monkey Man of Hoboken, New Jersey. And I was mildly seduced by the Monkey Man.
Have you guys ever heard of Sperm Man of Madison, New Jersey?
Well, I have now.
That's me, baby.
Yeah.
No, I have never been seduced by,
The Lizard Man.
The Lizard Man of South Carolina. Manuel, his first name, but.
I'm sure I'd remember. Is he a character in your movie?
He is, yes, yes.
This is a great movie. This is an epic film. This is already great.
Yeah, the Lizard Man's 1 in 1,000,000.
Now, Daniel, before we go, how can Ken and I help you? You're looking for a little blurb or a quote to drop into your movie?
Yeah, just like, you know, little bits of this, I'm sure.
What can I do to help you? What would you like me to say? I'm on camera. Ken is not on camera. What would you like me to say?
Do you hear the scratching of nocturnal crabs?
Do you want me to ask you that or do you want me to answer that?
Both.
I do. I have heard the scratching of nocturnal crabs. I thought it was my wife snoring gently, but then when I listened more carefully, I was horrified to realize that the crabs were at my window, the same way Edgar Allan Poe's Raven was at the window. And the crabs have come to remind me of all the opportunities in my life that have been lost and will never be recovered.
That is brilliant.
That's what the crabs mean to me.
And Ken, have you heard the scratching of nocturnal crabs?
Ken has not.
Okay.
I have not, and I think Andy's delusional. I think he's once again telling himself fairy tales to make himself feel better. The crabs were coming from inside the house. They were not at the window. My theory, because I've heard this story a million times and I've seen how Andy's changed it and embellished it over the years, going all the way back to when he first started telling it, I'm convinced that the crabs were inside the ductwork, not at the window.
And that is why I love Ken Friedman.
That was wonderful. I really want to, and actually I do have one more question, just because a very close friend of mine is an obsessive Monk fan. She watches it over and over again, and she has noticed that there is a sort of distinct anti-union theme. Anti-union theme.
There is.
I bet there is.
There's all, you know, like bad, you know, the bad guy is frequently a union.
Yeah, just like in real life. It's probably the key aspect of the show's popularity. I've dealt with union, public service unions. I'm enough. I can't think of a better villain.
That's really funny. Yeah, because you probably deal with unions all the time.
Yeah, I'm on the set dealing with unions.
Yeah.
Now, anyone that's dealt with unions will applaud me for that. What is your friend's name?
Mimi.
Well, hi, Mimi. Thanks for watching. You know, it's funny. I get a list of everyone who watches Monk. They, you know, NBC sends me a list. I've never seen Mimi's name on that list.
Well, she pirates cable, so.
Yeah, she might be watching on stolen cable.
Yeah, yeah.
Good going, Mimi.
Yeah. And you know, there's a Monk movie that will be released. I'm going to have to make sure it's not released the same weekend as Seduced by a Vampire.
Yes.
You know, we'll have some space between the two. But and there's no mention of Mimi in the movie, but I'm telling the three of us now, and I'm sending this out to Mimi. The movie is dedicated to Mimi. It won't be on the screen. I will never put it in writing.
In 2 minutes from now, you won't remember.
No, I've already forgotten.
That's really sweet and generous of you.
I'm a sweet and generous guy. I don't get enough credit for that, frankly.
No, you don't. Well, thank you, Daniel.
No, thank you guys very much. I hope this was helpful for you guys.
Who did you like better, me or Ken?
You know, I can't
Ken,
say right
that's
now.
That's Ken.
Because I know
that's
that,
Ken.
You know.
Any hesitation is Ken.
If I say Ken, I know that he'll hang up on me. And I just I still need the recording.
Well, we're happy.
I'll send you the recording.
Happy to help.
So after Ken sends the recording, I'll give you the answer.
Hey, good luck with this project and future projects, and I look forward to having my assistant watch your movie and tell me all about it.
Thank you so much.
I think we've definitely I don't know if I agree, Uncle Ken. I think we've definitely started.
That was listener Daniel Shady interviewing Andy Breckmanman and myself a couple of weeks ago. Andy is in Toronto shooting the new Monk movie for the next 6 weeks. And while he's away, we are going to be airing interviews that listeners have conducted with us. If you would like to conduct one, please email me at ken@wfmu.org. All the interviews are done over Zoom. Only one caveat. We are not open to doing any more interviews about vampires. We have one more interview to air for this evening, and that is from listener Marie, who was interested in how 7 Second Delay started and how Andy and I met. So here is the interview that Marie Dory conducted with me and Andy. So, Marie, this is your interview of us. So you can start. I don't know if you're doing it for a podcast or just personal reasons or whatever, but you can start it off however you want.
Marie, is this a podcast of yours?
No, it's just me being a fan. And, you know, I'm a longtime fan of WFMU and I love your show. And, you know, I've told Ken this a long, long time ago, because we connected on LinkedIn. I just think he's, you know, FMU is amazing. And I attribute it largely to him, you know, kind of getting it together over the years. And then, of course, you know, there's the DJs bringing their magic. But yeah, so I just was, you know, I love hearing about friendships and relationships. And I just thought it'd be fun to interview you guys.
So this interview is being conducted from up Ken's butt. You are just burrowing your way, kissing and smooching.
And by the way, I have a movie idea, but that's not why I scheduled this.
Okay.
I mean, you know, honest to God, I could pitch it in 10 seconds.
I would love to hear it, but I add a caveat. I'm sort of out of the business. And even when I was in the business, there was nothing I could do for my friends or family.
Oh, really?
But maybe I'll sneak it in at the end. But I love hearing a good movie idea, and I do wish you well, and I would be a cheerleader for you.
Thank you. And is that the masturbatorium you're in that I'm seeing?
Oh, dear gosh. I am in my house. I am in my basement. The masturbatorium.
He's not. You can come out and say it, Andy. You're not in the masturbatorium. I don't know why you're embarrassed to admit that.
Well, the masturbatorium has to be, for reasons I don't want to go into now, it has to be cleaned every other day.
Every
48 hours.
There's an exterior window above Andy's head, and there would never be an exterior window in the masturbatorium for reasons that I'll have to explain later.
Right.
Did you ever see...
When was that word first used?
I don't know if I coined it. I don't know if...
No, you know, I know where I first heard it. It was in the memoir Running with Scissors by Augustine Burroughs.
Wait, did that predate my first use of it?
Yes.
It did?
Yes, and then it was again used in the movie of Running with Scissors.
So some kind of zeitgeist, some kind of crazy zeitgeist.
Yeah, it's in the air. That's right. But I might have heard it secondhand, but I certainly didn't read that novel. Unless the novel has a lot of pictures. I don't read books without pictures.
No, but it was...
It coincided with internet porn's kind of takeoff, that word?
I guess it did. Running with Scissors. I thought that was a Sedaris memoir.
No. Sedaris-like, perhaps.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, it was a memoir.
Now, Marie, so you say you're interested. Are you a therapist? You're interested in people's relationships and friendships?
You know what? No, I'm not. But I actually was going to be. I went to school for that for a while and then I dropped out. I changed my mind. That's how I like to say it.
Okay. Well, I could tell you'd be a very good therapist.
What do you do now?
How do you pay the rent?
I am a medical copy editor. I work
on
pharmaceutical advertising. I'm actually on the clock now. Luckily, they can't see me. But yeah, it's a job for me, honestly. I'd rather be writing. I was a writer for a while, like educational, for encyclopedias.
Okay.
That's how old I am.
Well, I won't guess how old you are, but...
Wow, an encyclopedia writer.
Yeah.
Encyclopedias, I guess Wikipedia put a kibosh on all of that.
You got it. That was the biggest enemy. And I was actually on Encyclopedia Britannica staff for a little while, and we talked about Wikipedia a lot.
It's hard to compete with that. But writing, I will say writing, the great thing about writing is you don't need permission to do it. You don't need an office to do it. You can do it on your own. A lot of your favorite novels were written by writers who had full-time jobs doing something else.
Well, you know what? I'm not a creative writer. I like to get paid to write about not like the world. Like I love describing reality.
I have a pretty serious problem with reality, but I appreciate the work you're doing.
I like reality. Yeah, I too am fascinated by reality more than fiction.
Yes.
It's Ken's hoping. I mean, I love fiction too, but as a writer, I like, but anyways, go on.
Ken, when do you expect to be facing reality for the first time? Is that on your calendar?
Maybe today. In this interview.
Today. It's on my calendar. I'm seriously much more interested in nonfiction than fiction, both in what I read and in what I watch.
I could see that, Ken.
I also have more patience for nonfiction. But Marie, tell us what's the agenda today.
Okay. I just want to ask you some questions and you guys talk.
It's pretty
Ready?
Crazy.
All
it's
right.
A crazy idea.
Take
okay.
it take it away, question. Marie.
How did you guys ever first meet?
We met when Andy was performing his comic folk act. He was in Ann Arbor, Michigan, where I was program director of the college radio station, WCBN. And he came down to the station for an on-air interview to promote his show that night at the venue known as The Ark. And I was sitting in my office listening to him being interviewed down the hallway. And he was exactly the same on the air then as he is now. He completely commandeered the interview and, you know, made fun of everything that that the DJ was trying to take seriously. So that was when we met, and then we hung out, and then
you hung out after that interview?
Yeah, we hung out after that interview for a few hours.
Why did you hang out?
We went out for a meal and saw a movie. We went.
Like,
and
then, I mean, like, why did you even do that? You didn't even know each other up until that point, right?
Well, I guess
I was. I guess I don't remember it as well as Ken, which is true for almost everything. But I imagine I was visiting. I was new in town, didn't know anyone, and I don't know if I had the chutzpah to ask if Ken wanted to see a movie, or we just
you probably asked. I mean, we went out to grab a meal. We just went to a fast food place for lunch, and right. I'm sure you suggested going to see the movie. We saw Nighthawks with Sylvester Stallone and Euro Trash Terrorists and the Roosevelt Island Tram.
Now Ken had to change his plans. He had a night of whoring scheduled, so he put off his whoring for a night.
And, yeah, just for one night.
Maybe you're trying to save him. No, but like, so you had lunch. And did you get along right away, or what did you think of? Did you have thoughts like, "Wow, he's so funny"? Like, well, did you think that Ken, or what were your thoughts?
Well, Andy has no memory of this at all.
Okay.
Correct, Andy.
I have no memory of it at all. But I would also argue that I can't verify Ken's version of this at all. Maybe, Ken, maybe you've just told this story so often. Maybe you're remembering not the actual incident, but you're remembering the stories that you've told about it.
Yeah, I generally don't do that. I've got a really good memory. I can remember the mall we went to, the restaurant we went to. We went to an Arby's.
We went to an Arby's? You remember that?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Arby's. Oh, God. Well, that must have been. Right? Like, is that real meat?
I don't know, but that must be love. I only take people to Arby's if I'm really, really in love.
Yeah.
I remember the smell of those buns.
And the smell of those
smelling buns.
But anyway, then Andy and I kind of parted ways. I did see him perform another couple of times, I think, when he was in Ann Arbor. But then we totally lost track for decades until I saw his name and his phone number, or his name and a phone number, on the desk of the program director at WFMU, who at the time was David Newgarden. And I asked David, why did he have Andy Breckman's name and number?
How many years later was this about?
At least 10.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, at least 10 years later.
Okay. So I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, and David told me that it's because Andy was interested in doing a show. So I just started lobbying David to make sure that Andy came in and did an audition tape and all that.
Because you really thought, like, he could have a good show.
Yeah, I thought he was hilarious. I remembered him from, you know, having met him and seen him perform. You know, I thought he was hilarious.
And Andy, did you remember or know that Ken was at WFMU?
No. Mm-hmm. No, not at all. I had an assistant. I used to hire assistants to help me write. And I had a young assistant named Will Baum, B-A-U-M, talented, funny guy. And He was in a band. Can't remember the name of the band, but the band had a relationship with the station.
Right. He was in the band Love Child, which was on Homestead Records, yeah. Which was a label that David had a really close relationship with. So, yeah.
Well, there's your proof about that's your proof about Ken's memory. And yeah. and Will one afternoon was going to go to the station. Maybe they were going to do an interview or a concert in the studio. This is back when the station was still on campus at Uppsala College. And I did mention to him that I always, you know, I always kind of wanted to try to do a radio show. I had no radio experience at all. I even had trouble listening to the radio. I was so much a newbie. I couldn't figure out how to dial it in or change the stations. I just didn't know much about radio. And
wait a second. Are you serious? You couldn't figure out how to operate a radio?
Yeah, I didn't know how to. I had trouble operating radios. So that's how much of a rookie I was. You've never had a rookie like that.
I've never even heard of somebody who had trouble operating a radio.
So well, the radios I bought had more than one knob. There were often three knobs, and then in the car, my radio had not just the knobs, Ken, but multiple buttons. So it wasn't just one big knob.
Oh, okay, I see.
And then there's all this right. thing that moved along as you twisted the knobs, like right, like.
Well, I never got that. I never got that far. Yeah, I didn't get up to that. Excuse me, Ken. I didn't go to college and major in electronics, like some people. So anyway, I went to the station with my assistant Will Baum,
you go to the station?
Well, I went with I accompanied Will Baum to meet people there and to ask what I'd have to do to get a show or to be considered for a show.
And why did you want a show?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know. I guess I am inherently ambitious. Maybe I'm narcissistic enough to you know want the attention. Now that I'm thinking of it, no one's ever asked me that. Why did I want a show? You know, I guess I had recently given up performing. I used to perform regularly, and I had given that up. I was just writing at the time, so maybe I missed performing in my life more than I will ever want to admit. I missed it. So that was the impulse there, perhaps. But anyway, I went and I signed up, and there was an audition process, and I did go through the audition process. I believe before I hooked up with Ken, I went through the audition process, and I killed it. I just killed that audition. I did fantastic. They've never heard it.
You remember what you did?
No. All I remember is how great I was.
Ken, do you remember what you did?
Yeah, I still have the tapes.
If Ken still has the tape, I have to amend my previous.
What did he do, Ken?
Oh geez, you know there were a number of first shows that Andy did.
Yeah, they were pretty raw.
Yeah, and I think maybe the first show might have just been on tape. It might not even have been on the air. I'm not sure. I can't remember.
I can't even imagine what it was. I do remember one show I did. There used to be a cartoon every day in the paper called "They'll Do It Every Time."
Oh yeah.
People would send in suggestions for the cartoon, and the people who sent in suggestions, they were listed by name at the bottom of each cartoon every day. And I do remember one show where I called the people up, and I asked them how getting a cartoon in a syndicated comic strip changed their life.
Huh. I don't think that was your first show. What I remember as your very first show is I think it was either with Will Baum or with David Newgarden as your co-host, not as me, because I was listening as I was driving. And I think it might have been the first time you were on the air live taking calls, which really to me was your very first show. And I remember what you did, which was something we've done actually since then, too. You solicited ideas for movies. You solicited movie pitches from listeners. and we took them very quickly. And then at the end of the show, you called up an agent friend of yours, and we repitched the three best ideas.
That sounds like a great idea.
Yeah.
Maria, I'm sorry that I missed you, because I know you have some movie ideas too. But you would have fit right in on that idea.
Mm-hmm. But you know, right from the get go, Andy was always trying to come up with these, you know, stunt like or audience participation concepts that nobody had ever, you know, tried on the radio before. And it always had to have an ending, just like that very first show had an ending, calling up the real Hollywood agent, you know, with the top three ideas and seeing which one he liked best.
Yeah.
No, that is a dynamic, a format that I did like. I can't claim I invented it, but I do like it. What else, Marie? What else can we do for you?
So Andy's first show was basically a call-in show?
Yeah.
We've been doing the same show.
Wait, it was solo though? It was just Andy?
No. I had a different co-host. I've occasionally done a few moments solo, and it's terrifying for me. I don't know how people do it.
Yeah, I think the very first audition tape that Andy made, he was solo, but the first time he was on the air, he was with, I think, Will Baum taking phone calls.
And how did Ken get into the mix?
Ken just is shameless like that. He just when he wants something, he'll steamroll over anyone and anything, you know, to get his way. You know, he's so charming about it. The other people, you know, people don't get angry at him.
What happened was Will Baum was doing it, but then he decided to move to L.A. For his career. So he left. He's suddenly out of town. And then our program director at the time, David Newgarden, who was also FMU's music director for a long time, he did it a couple of times with Andy and said, I can't do this anymore. Mm-hmm. And he asked me if I would take over just long enough to teach Andy how to engineer for himself. Because the other call-in shows we had on FMU at that time did not have two co-hosts. It was one person, such as Chris T on Aerial View, engineering for himself. So initially, I was just supposed to be there for 2 or 3 weeks to show Andy the ropes and how to engineer.
And how did that go?
It didn't go at all. It was obvious from the very first show that there was no way this guy was going to be able to engineer for himself.
Well, I could have, but I just didn't. You have to believe me. I just didn't care enough to learn. You have to believe.
I don't know that you could have. We have had people who haven't been able to engineer, and I think you would have been like them.
Probably.
And so, did you have a kind of a chemistry there? Did you notice, like, hey, we got a decent rapport here?
Well, I willed myself, just sheer force of will, to like Ken.
Be able to stand being in the same room.
To enjoy. I just willed myself to look for his positive qualities.
Mm-hmm.
And was it still a call-in show
all the way through?
Yeah, it was a call-in show. Marie, how long have you been listening to the station?
Oh, well, wait, I want to know before I forget. Did you ever rebroadcast those early shows, Ken?
Yeah, but there's a lot of missing ones from the first 5 years. There's probably more missing shows than we have tapes of from the first 5 years.
I bet the listeners would like to hear that. I know I would love to hear some of them.
No, they wouldn't.
There's a lot of them in the archives. There's a lot of the early shows in the archives. And I think if you listen back to whenever we air a really old 7 Second Delay, one thing that people comment on is that Andy sounds much younger. They never say that I sound younger, but they do say that Andy sounds younger. And I don't think it's
because you haven't aged, Ken.
I think it's... It's not Andy's voice that's aged. It's just early on he had a level of optimism and enthusiasm and he was committed in a way that like went out the window, you know, probably by year 2000.
Well, the world beat it out of me.
Maybe now, you could call that relaxing.
Yeah, I relaxing. Hey, Marie, when did you start listening?
I believe it was in the early 90s. And okay. I was living in New York at the time, and it was a boyfriend who turned me on to it. And he was a big fan of Dave the Spaz and The Hound.
He had good taste.
And I started...
he had good taste in chicks, too, if you don't mind saying.
Oh, thank you, Andy. Yeah, I started listening, and then I moved back to Chicago, where I'm from, and I couldn't listen for a few years, and I was so excited when I could start listening again online. I just loved it. You know, I really loved listen to WFMU from Chicago.
Well, you know, you mentioned the dial and the little line that allows you to change the station. I recommend.
You can see it as it moves along the number.
I recommend trying that, Marie, giving that a whirl, because there are lots of wonderful.
Unfortunately, I can't do that because I can't get WFMU on my radio anymore.
Okay, you listen online.
Yeah.
Now, what else? We have a few minutes left. What else what else can we do for you?
Well, I guess let's see here. So, how did you become friends outside of the show? You just grew to like each other, kind of. You grew to withstand each other. What happened?
Well, I guess it's like a divorce situation where I get to see my dad 1 hour a week, and you just buy. Divorced kids that have weekend visitation rights. Ken and I saw each other 1 hour a week and occasionally for a meal, on weekends, we're going to see.
Did you enjoy your initial participation?
What's that?
Did you enjoy your initial participation or you?
Oh,
well,
yeah.
Initially you were just there to kind of fill in the blank because David didn't want to do it anymore.
Well, initially, yeah, but we definitely became friends. And
I would say who wrote The Tipping Point? Oh, Gladwell.
Oh, Malcolm Gladwell. Yeah.
You know, in his book Blink, he talks about how you size people up very, very quickly in life, you know, and I believe in that. I believe I'm a very quick judge of character. I'm usually.
Wait, and I wanted to ask you your initial thoughts about each other.
Well, I don't remember. I don't remember meeting Ken. That's true. My memory is bad. But I can tell you that I must have instantly sensed this is a kindred spirit. I judge people. I'll tell you a very quick story. When I'm in a restaurant and I'm ordering, and the waiter comes up and takes my order, I always do the same thing. I hold the menu upside down and I say to the waiter, excuse me, my menu is upside down. I always do the same thing because I just want to say because it's a test. It really is a test. I want to see if the waiter will play along. We'll say, "I'll get you another menu, sir." I want to see if the waiter will laugh.
I'm sure your whole family is like they're ready for Dad to do that.
Well, they're sick of it, of course. But it's my test to see who I'm dealing with. Is this a person who gets me?
I feel sorry for your waiters.
Yeah, I feel very sorry for them too. This is a person who will play along. And that's when I meet anybody, including you today. When I meet anybody, I always find a way to test them initially. I say something stupid or I make a joke or I bounce an idea off them or I ask them a provocative question. And I just want to test them as I put feelers, it's like putting feelers out. Like an ant will have a little, a feelers antenna out. And I must have done that for Ken. And I can tell you, without remembering the specifics, that I immediately must have seen he was a kindred spirit. He would play along. He would, in my parlance, he would hit the ball back, when you play volleyball.
Yeah.
Some people can bounce the ball back over the net. And Ken is someone that, at least as far as I'm concerned, can hit the ball back over the net. And I know that must have been my first impression, although I can't specifically remember it.
Yeah. Probably just cool.
Well, I just, I remember, I knew Andy as a performer and, from meeting him in the early 80s or 1980 or whenever it was. And I always thought he was very funny. Then it became clear, then other things started to reveal themselves to me. And also our dynamic started to reveal itself to me. And it just kind of hooked me in. We had this really, I think we mentioned to somebody who we were talking to yesterday, we had this strange rotating dominance where the upper hand would get passed back and forth between us, or in many ways, he would be dominant and then I would be dominant.
Yeah, I know. Our show, Ken is very competitive, and our show is very much like a contest. And sometimes when we have Ken versus Andy shows, I know Ken takes it very, very seriously. And that's a big part of the dynamic. Also, I would say the hand job cemented our relationship very quickly, I would say. Wouldn't
you
agree, Ken?
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's what I mean by transferring the upper hand back and forth.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I knew you meant.
Well, you know what? I actually have to run. It's just after 12 o'clock noon.
This has been our best interview ever. Hey, if anyone wants to interview us, like Marie just did, they can contact us at ken@wfmu.org. And you don't have to have a podcast. You can just be a curious fan.
Can I pitch my movie idea real fast?
Okay, you have 20 seconds. It's an elevator pitch.
Yes. Mad German scientist with a thick, funny, or German accent who is in America decides to commit guerrilla research and goes out and does these kind of horrible experiments on people, like trying to cure somebody's alcoholism by going into the brain. And he does three things, and he then becomes like a fugitive. And he's in America, in small town America. And he's got like an assistant, and he and the assistant have chemistry. And it's supposed to be kind of funny. Like, the dialogue's funny.
Do you have a script? Did you write it?
Do I sound confident? Yeah, I actually have a lot of the script written.
Okay, well, maybe somebody's listening. A producer or director is listening, and if they contact Ken, he'll forward that along. That sounds great to me. It sounds like a comedy. It sounds like a comedic version of The Stranger. Remember The Stranger?
Yes, and it's got some good music, like Here Come the Bums by Snakefinger. It's going to have a really good soundtrack, and he's being chased while
Andy
bums are chasing him.
Andy loves Snakefinger.
He affected a bum.
I was going to say, I think you should cast Christoph Waltz in the main role.
I think that would be great, Ken.
And also, there's a new miniseries called The Consultant, starring Christoph Waltz, which sounds
I believe Christoph Waltz is a fan of our show and may very well be listening.
Are you serious? You're not serious.
He's not serious.
No, I'm not serious.
I have to run.
Thanks, Ken. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Marie. Okay, thanks, Andy.
Great.
Bye.
Thanks, Marie.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the first in a series of 7 Second Delay listeners interviewing Andy and myself. This is to fill the shows while Andy is in Toronto, not quite overseeing, lurking, not the right word either, stalking, hanging out outside the lot, the movie lot where they are shooting the Monk movie in Toronto, Canada. Andy was trying to pretend that the shoot was taking place in Toronto, France. But now that he's gone, I can tell you that it's actually Toronto, Canada. If you would like to interview me and Andy, I think we have a few more spaces available. One caveat, we don't want to be interviewed about vampires anymore. We feel like we've done the definitive vampire interview, and we also don't want to be interviewed about our origin story. You just heard that right there with listener Marie asking us about the beginnings of 7 Second Delay. But if you have another topic, boilers, lycanthropy, self-flagellation, email me, ken@wfmu.org. This is WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope in New York City, and Rockland County at 91.9 FM and online at WFMU.org. Thanks to Friends of Don Quixote for our theme song. Thanks to Jeremiah for the newsletter. Please stay tuned for Weekly World Blues with Matt Fiveash.
Sound of the blues scale. The blues scale is very simple, very useful, but also very simple to build. All you have to do is know your minor pentatonic scales. So in this case, I was playing A.
Blues come so many different ways. until it's kind of hard to explain.
Girl for me. Tommy T, Lottie.